Blog Talk Radio.
Michigan, where my cohort host resides, and I'm looking for him now, trying to figure out all these dials and switches, man, trying to get this damn thing running right. It's show number 12, and I'm still on this POS laptop, and
first world problems, man.
Yeah, this is I'm running an economy show here, dude. I don't got the professional stuff I need, and stupid ass laptop of mine is just a POS, man. I tell you, it's just I don't know. I block it off. I got ads popping up everywhere. Things are freezing. I can't get anything to play right. Like it unlocks me from the Blog Talk site. So yeah, I'm dealing with one thing after another. So. If you hear a loud crash in the middle of the show, you'll know what happened. I broke this motherfucker in half. So
right. Yeah,
that's what happened.
Yeah, mine's got some funny shit going on with it right now too. I'm trying to on my regular PC, which I don't use very often, and it's got all kinds of crazy shit popping up on me too. My iPad's not too bad, but it's about to die. I gotta charge it here.
Look, right.
What's going on, man? What have you been up to besides the technological problems of the 21st century? What else has been happening with you?
Not much. Same old stuff. Doing a lot of band stuff, trying to get these couple bands.
You certainly seem to be in touch with your anger.
Yeah, I hit that about 30 seconds ago when I was talking about snapping my laptop like a fucking pretzel. But no, just trying to get these two bands I got. Well, actually, it turns out to be like three bands rolling. The one band's a punk band, and it's got two arms of it with three of the same people and then two different bass players. One arm of it is we're doing punk covers, and we're going to do try to do like real nice paying gigs and just do like 80s punk rock, all the classics,
nice.
80s punk, and just a few sets and stuff like that. And then the other end of it is the original of that guitar player and drummer in that band with a different bass player, the originals music that they're writing. And it's just starting to get rolling now with that. And I think it's going to be under a different name. And then I'm also playing in an old buddy's band I used to play in. It's a more of a metal, really hard metal thing, with a couple guitar players and the full work. So it looks pretty kind of busy with all that right now.
Right, what songs are you doing, man? Like, what songs are you doing specifically?
Oh, for the cover one?
Either.
The list right now is right in front of me. We got the ones we know right now. It's Subliminal from Suicidal Tendencies, Too Drunk to Fuck, Dead Kennedys, I Love Living in the City, Fear, Rise Above, Black Flag, Skulls, Misfits, Hollywood Babylon, Misfits, Where Eagles Dare, Misfits. We're working on Alcohol, Gangrene, Seek and Destroy, The Stooges, Right Brigade, Bad Brains, Gimme, 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 Black Flag, March of the SOD, Sergeant D from SOD, and just a bunch of stuff, you know, just a lot of the 80s shit. When we finally get done, if we get it how we want it, we're gonna have probably about 45 songs.
Yeah, that's sweet. That sounds good.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Right on.
So just get out there,
the,
have fun.
I went to see the Flamin' Lips this last Wednesday in Detroit, and that was a crazy
super psychedelic show, man.
It was out of my. It was like a visual assault on your senses, man. They had this massive screen behind them that was like floor to ceiling, you know, side to side. And it had maybe about a one-inch bulb. It was just a complete like screen of light bulbs, and you could show images and stuff. And a really good show, super intense in parts. And yeah, man, they tore it up. It was a good show.
Where was that at?
It was at the Fillmore. Last Wednesday night. I don't think they even sold out, man. I don't know if they're selling out most everywhere they go, but they've been around a long time, man. I saw them 21 years ago at the Warfield in San Francisco. I saw them open up for Porno for Pyros, his side project.
Right.
He was out there playing, and I just happened to be out there, and they were playing at the Warfield, and I knew there was tickets available, so I got some tickets, and Flaming Lips were opening for them. And that was like 21.
Right.
That was in 93. So it's been 21 years since I've seen them. And they're way better now than I thought last time I had seen them, you know, 21 years ago. I was less familiar with them then. But, man, they put on a killer show. Killer show all night. It was very, very intense and, you know, very few, you know, slow points to it where you weren't interested in what was going on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was
and you've been doing all You've been hanging out in Detroit a lot the last week or so. I've seen you.
I have been.
You know, the weekend you were down at a Tiger game. For Tigers, I noticed.
I'll be back there. The 28th of July, man. If you want to hook up for a beer, I'm going to be going to see Jack White. I think it's the last Wednesday in July. He's playing at the Masonic down there, dude. You heard what he did to the Masonic, didn't you? He donated $180,000 to save the Masonic because they were about to the government was about to repossess it because of back taxes. And,
right.
You know, he's from Detroit, of course, and he donated $180,000 and they renamed the theater the Jack White Theater.
Really?
So
I did not know that.
I think this is going to be the first time he goes back to play in that theater after it's been renamed in his name. So I think it's going to be a killer show, man. It sold out in like 8 minutes. I can't believe I got tickets for it. So
right.
I think that ought to be a hot show.
Unfortunately, we're going to be out of town, I believe, that weekend. Because I think Ursula's birthday weekend, we're going to Niagara Falls for like 4 days. And we've got a cabin out there. Yeah, we're just going to cabin. We've got a hot tub and, you know, pool and everything. We're going to have a little kind of a, you know, highfalutin camper type camping weekend.
Yeah.
So,
we got about something going on every weekend, dude, until almost.
Right.
it's.
Well, I know.
I feel like a fucking rock star right now, man. All my weekends are almost completely booked already. So,
right.
Yeah, man.
Well, I seen you were talking about some coming weekends in July that you might have to switch the day in a show. So what I was thinking is we'll have to pump it here, tell everybody, and then maybe when we put up ads and stuff, I'll mention it too. Since we started out on Wednesday and that wasn't able to stay on that because of my band stuff, and then now we tried to go to Monday, and with fall coming with Monday Night Football and everything, maybe I don't want to try to fight that so much.
Well, you're already looking forward to football. It's not even July yet.
No, I'm saying in a couple months, you know, I'm just saying in a couple months, people a lot of times are not going to want to log in at 9 o'clock at night or something. So what we'll probably end up doing is just around our schedules, we'll just do kind of guerrilla radio, dude. We'll just go week by week. I mean, we won't have a standard day. Maybe, you know, we'll try to do it on a Monday. But I mean, if we can't,
yeah, we'll
try to
keep
it on a Tuesday or a Thursday.
We'll just try to keep it
in the middle of the week, and because I'm not always going to be practicing on Wednesdays either. There might be a time I need to practice on a Tuesday, or I'll never have to practice on Monday because the drummer I play with in both bands plays in another band on Monday night. So I'll never have to play Monday night practice for fan practice. So
okay, well, we'll try and keep it open for Mondays, and then whatever, man, we'll be flexible. You know, whatever, fuck, we'll try and
if we have to
let everybody
to a
know,
Tuesday or
you know, the
Thursday,
week before
we'll
or something
to,
on the show and, you know, shit like that. So we'll figure it out as we go along.
Yeah, you, yeah. Man, you were spending so much time in Detroit, dude. I was expecting to see you walking down 8 Mile or something.
I know.
Staggering around in front of one of the liquor stores or something. I didn't know you'd be.
I took the fucking wrong turn for when we were coming down for Flaming Lips, and I ended up coming down, what is it, Grand River? Is that that heads right downtown? That's a rough neighborhood down there, dude. That is extra rough, and there's not a whole lot of
there
of shiny buildings
shot.
Around there, man.
Fucking hit it, right?
Hey, dude, I'm reading a book right now called Detroit. It's the Place to Be. And this dude that wrote it, he's an author for Rolling Stone, he does article journalists for Rolling Stone. He does the articles for him, and he grew up in Detroit and he did deliveries down there as a kid and shit. A really interesting book. You should check it out. He talks about he usually compares the super past, like the 1920s of how Detroit was, to when he was a kid, to how it is now. You know, and he makes these comparisons between the city through time and stuff. Really interesting. And he doesn't concentrate entirely on the crime and the crazy shit, you know. It's a lot of good stuff in there, too. So, but you should check it out. It's by Mark Benelli, I think is the dude's name. Really good book so
Mark
far.
Benelli.
Yeah.
That's cool. I bet you, Mortician, my wife would like to probably check that out.
Yeah,
she's
it's an interesting book. You know, they go off on the auto industry, and Coleman Young, of course, for quite a while, he talks about shit like that, so.
Right.
But he's got some horror stories to tell, dude. He's got this one of, and he compared it back to this crime that happened in the 1920s that was somewhat similar to it, but these guys, this rival crack gang had set up in a house about a block or two blocks away from an existing crack dealer. And they wanted to scare him off, so they kidnapped one of their clients, one of their customers, the rivals, brought him over, killed him, and then chopped him up into pieces and put his body parts around the neighborhood.
Holy crap!
He was saying how it didn't even get any press. He was the only one. He just fuck, dude.
Yeah.
He was the only journalist that covered that crime. He was the only one there. And he just happened to do it on an off, like, I'll go in and check it out and see what's going on. And, you know, and he ended up going into the court for the day, first day. And he was the only journalist there covering it. That's how, like, commonplace that what's going on in Detroit right now. And,
right.
But it's they talk about, you know, there's 140 square miles of emptiness in Detroit.
Right.
That can hold like two, I forgot what it is, like two Manhattans and like all of Boston, all of, like all these major cities would fit inside the empty space of Detroit.
Right.
But they're talking about renewal efforts, things like that, which are really interesting. But he goes into all of it. That crime is shocking, dude. I couldn't. And he's like, he talks pretty much every day about the family stuff and how they were, you know, they almost, you know, weren't surprised by it, you know, that he was cut up into little pieces. And he interviewed, like, the neighbor that was down there at the court or something. And they go, that's just what goes on in Detroit.
Yeah.
Damn,
that's what I was just
you better watch
to,
your back, bro. Watch that one freaked me out a little bit. I'm down there all the time, and I was like, "Damn, that's wicked!" You know, fuck.
Yeah. Well, my wife's not boss, but a guy that she worked kind of a co. Oh, she well, he was a boss on a part time job she was doing, and he ended up getting mugged not far from our house. Guy just came up to him, smashed him in the head, grabbed his iPhone, and ran.
Damn.
Just standing outside of a restaurant at a lunch business meeting. And,
well, this guy said
you know,
in his book that the it's a cardinal sin to get gas after dark. There's you know cruising around. You're asking for it. We should do that.
You almost have to know. You have to know what gas stations are safe in what areas. I mean. I pretty much can go. I pretty much I'm not worried pretty much anywhere I go in Detroit because I look like an extra from American History X.
Right.
So I got the friggin' full.
They're
I'm like 290 pounds. Full sleeve tattoos, shaved head. Most of the time they don't bother me, but like you know, I talk to my daughter and my wife and stuff, and I'd say, hey, you know, stay off of such and such street in that gas station or in that corner. It's not,
yeah.
You know, you don't need to go there at nighttime, you know, and stay off there at day if you, you know, during the day if you can.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. He gets robbed too down. He gets mugged downtown in the book and talks about it, and that's what ended up having him go to a gun control class or a gun CPR class, a CPL class.
Right.
Certified pistol license
right.
class, you know. Hey, dude, what are you, what's going on here? What is that?
What?
What is that?
It's an ad. It's one of them goddamn fucking ads on Block Talk that keep popping up. Some of them are audio, dude. They,
fuck, man.
Yeah, I got to try to fucking turn it down.
Oh, sweet. Well, that, you know, it's just our background now, man. We just... we've turned into an infomercial show.
Yeah. Listen to that, dude. Friggin'
that's
just ignorant.
Fucking hilarious, man. So
right.
Yeah, so anyway,
real,
man,
real
so this
professional.
Dude, whatever. So this dude in the book, you know, this Mark Bonelli, he gets robbed and he ends up going to a concealed pistol license class. And
right.
They're talking about what it's legal to do in Detroit, you know, and they're saying, or, you know, in the state,
right.
Obviously, in general. But, you know, you can't shoot anybody out on your lawn. If they're breaking into your house, it's legal to kill them in Michigan.
Right.
But if they're
right.
out on the lawn, even, if they're not attempting to break into your house, you can't shoot them legally. And he said this lady, she's all like 70 years old, sitting next to him. She raises her hand and goes, can you shoot him and then drag him into the house?
and
there's a lawyer standing right next to him with him through the whole class. And the lawyer goes, I would not recommend doing that.
Right.
Isn't that a daisy? Isn't that
oh,
a daisy?
Hey, they also
we got
said,
our,
like,
I,
go ahead.
We got Crusher Crushers on live, too, I think. Isn't there, are you there, Christ Crusher?
Yeah, what's
that
up,
you?
Man?
What's going
up,
on?
What's
yeah,
up, dude?
What's up, man?
We're just talking about Detroit right now, man. One
yeah,
last thing about it, too, man, is that they said that 43% of the concealed pistol licenses in the state of Michigan are out of Detroit.
Right.
So there's a lot of people packing, man. And that's
well, there is. Well, there is.
I
was just talking about that with Hell Broke Lucy offline. And we, you know, he hates gun advocates. I don't want to speak for him, but he thinks, you know, and I've kind of come to agree with him in a lot of ways. I mean, I should let him speak for himself, but I basically believe he's in for, you know, he wants gun control. He thinks
yeah.
he calls everybody lead heads that are out, you know. I agree with him, dude. These guys that are open carrying out, walking into Walmart with an AR-15
oh, yeah.
strapped to their back, they're fucking idiots, dude.
Yeah.
Some
well,
guys are,
you know, dude, it's intimidation
ridiculous.
Is what it is. I mean, they think maybe they're trying to prove a point, but it really, in the end, it's intimidation. I mean, I'm a pro-gun advocate, man. I own guns. I have a CPL. And if that dude, you know, if Lucy were to walk around Detroit and live in Detroit and spend time there, he would know the necessity for it. Not only in
right.
Detroit, but certain, you know, neighborhoods all over the country, man. There are dangerous neighborhoods in this country. You know what I'm saying?
If you want to go
and
get,
sometimes
if you want to go
protect
get training,
yourself.
Right. If you want to go get training and you want to get licensed and you want to carry a concealed weapon, I mean, I'm fine for that, right? But these guys that are walking around with shotguns and some of these shotguns now they have like these FosTech makes one. They're almost like automatic shotguns. They got big drums on them. They got
yeah.
these guns now, man. These they're like almost like they're supposed to be semi-auto, but they shoot like automatic. They're like shortened machine guns and AR-15s and stuff and AKs, and they got these big drum friggin' ammo things on them. And they're just they're you know like they're like $3,000 and stuff. They're just insane, these guns they got. These guys want to walk around in public with that shit. It's ridiculous.
Right.
You know, all it does
I agree with that, man.
Scare people.
There's got to be something. I mean, if you want to be able to carry and legally in Michigan, if you have a concealed license, concealed pistol license, it still cannot be obvious to anyone, including the police. If it's obvious
right.
and showing in your clothing or apparent in any manner, you can either get arrested for it or get ticketed for it. So
right.
it's got to be completely, not obvious to anyone, no matter where it's at.
I was thinking about that earlier.
Yeah, I
completely agree with that. I mean, you know, there are places that that people live when you're talking about protection that, you know, you have to, you know, you need these weapons.
But to open carry
is you're asking for trouble. I mean, let's be honest. When you got a semi-automatic rifle hanging over your shoulder and you're at Starbucks or at Home Depot or something,
right.
I mean, no one around you feels safe. No one knows who you are. No one knows what to even have that weapon on you. So you're not making anybody feel safe. You know, like you said, it's intimidation.
I'm all for a concealed
weapon.
To me, it's more of an anti-government thing, you know?
Right.
It's more of a I'm going to do what I want. This is my Michigan's an open carry state, so you got these knuckleheads that want to walk around with, you know, all the biggest, baddest guns they can get. And it's really, I see that guy in a holster, and he's got a big old 44 Magna ported, Smith & Wesson, whatever, with an 8-inch barrel on it, and he just looks like a thinks he's dirty,
Dirty Harry.
Dirty Harry,
man.
You know, and you look like a fucking idiot. You know, you look like young Ted Nugent or something, It's like, come on.
Now, this is my thing, though, man. I mean, like, I think shotguns, handguns, they should be, you should legally be able to own them. I mean, and there are certainly certain parts of the country that you're very likely to be broken into if you live in that, certain areas of certain cities around the country or not even. I mean, there's a lot of rural poverty now, too, man. And, you got to be able to protect your own. That's all I'm saying, man, if someone's busting down your door to get into your house,
exactly.
you're fucked if you can't protect yourself.
You know, what is the police response time on that?
Right.
By the time the police get there, it may be too late.
Right.
I'm not, willing, especially in a high-crime area or a place where you would need a gun more than others, that's especially something that needs to be taken into consideration is, sometimes the police don't even show up till a half hour later. What's happened by then?
Right.
That's not a fear tactic to, home invasions do happen. They do happen, and,
right.
You need to be prepared.
The police chief here in Detroit this last winter, he went on the news, on the local Detroit news, and said, if these guys, thugs keep breaking into your house, he goes, just shoot them, we won't prosecute you. He's like, shoot them. He said that, and it was like in February and March, the home shootings of people doing B&Es went through the roof. People started just shooting people and killing them. There was like eight deaths in like a 6-week period of people breaking in. It was even like one was an older lady. And then there was that one story, Dennis, or DB, I don't remember, was when the guy got pulled out of his truck where he had knocked the kid over with his car, and the mob pulled him out of the 10 or 12 people pulled him out of his car, and they were stopping him to death. That happened
was that
not
in
far
Michigan?
From my house.
That was
on the east side of Detroit. It was a few miles.
People crawling into your windows. Can you imagine what that's
right.
like?
Well, most of them are barred, dude. In Detroit,
almost all ground floor windows
are barred if people are living
there. It was 10 or 12 black people. They were stopping this middle-aged white guy to death. They actually had to go into an induced coma and stuff. He almost died. Well, an old black lady, retired nurse, was watching, and nobody else would help him. And she took her snub-nosed .38, ran out of her house, brandished it. She might have even fired a shot in the air. I'm not sure.
I think she got
screaming.
All pointed at all of them.
She started screaming and pointed at, and they all ran away. And she saved this guy's life.
You got extraordinary instances like that, the people that really want to put the stomp out on guns don't really take into consideration.
Yeah. Really? You know, man, I still go back to, though, there's a difference there, I mean, in between that and the Newtown stuff, or this guy out in California is doing the drive-by killing all those people, you know, on and on. I mean, you know, is that I still think there's a link with guns and people on pharmaceutical medicines, man. And those people are unstable enough that it drives them to the point of committing, you know, a mass murder of some kind, you know.
Right.
And,
yeah.
Well,
you know,
another thing is, you know, they said, like, my wife's big into statistics. That's one of her jobs, is she looks up statistics all the time. And she said you're more likely to be shot with your own gun in a lover's quarrel than you are to shoot somebody stopping a B&E or stopping a violent crime. She said you're more likely to be shot by your lover or your partner in a rage than you are to shoot somebody else.
I mean, you
got to
know how
like,
to use it, man. That's the thing. You got to know how to use it. I was watching this lady. I think it was in Indiana. They were carrying into like an Applebee's or something, you know, Chili's. And the lady, she had a topo. She was sitting there eating, and she goes, "I don't know if they've been trained or not. If they know how to operate that rifle properly,
right.
even."
Exactly.
You know, I mean, she's like, I'm not, you know, I don't know what the hell their abilities are or if I should be concerned or not. She's like, it's ridiculous.
Right.
I'm there eating lunch and these dudes come in with, you know, fucking ARs, you know.
Right.
So it's such a complex issue. And, it's a point where there's a lot of areas of the country right now where you got to have guns to defend yourself. But there's also so much access to them that people are going crazy with them.
You know how you
know?
Can tell if the guy's been properly trained? If he has a camouflage baseball hat on that says "Get her done," you know he's well trained. Yep. my wife Morticia, she told me that because I was contemplating a while back of since we moved to Detroit, getting my CPL and getting just a little snub-nosed, hammerless 38, little Ruger or something, revolver just to carry, you know, something small, and get a CPL, just because we've had so many things in this area that, I mean, and she was like, I really don't want you, I don't want to drive around, I don't want you to have a gun. She just thinks that it draws your chances of getting shot or go up when you have a gun, not go down.
I don't know, man. I think if I had a chance, I'd carry one out around in Detroit, dude. My personal opinion. Depending on where you're at and stuff too, right? I mean, you know, when you're going into some neighborhoods, you maybe shouldn't be going into at a certain time of day, you know. And then that's
right.
where it's, you know, consideration for fuck. Maybe I should have a gun on me, you know. I've drawn mine out of Detroit.
Be that way, you know,
times, man. You know. I mean,
it just sucks that it has to be that way.
Right.
Because these people that are doing this stuff, these people that are that depraved, that are doing these killings and muggings and stuff and robberies, they're shooting them and killing them is not the answer, you know.
Yeah.
This stuff needed to be stopped a long time ago when they were 3, 4, 5 years old. They need, and this is what's going to, this is going to lead into when we talk about this free will thing. I know you watched the video of Sam Harris.
Yeah.
That I had sent you a while ago about free will and all that.
Yeah,
and,
I watched the whole
thing. These people, all the circumstances that bring them to the point where they do this kind of stuff, brandishing a gun or scaring them or shooting at them or even shooting them and killing them or shooting them and then having them arrested or whatever, it's not going to, you know, that's not going to solve the problem. You're not going to, you know, me having a little revolver or a CPL carry around is not going to clean up Detroit. You know,
no.
I'm not going to save Detroit. I'm not going to be able to shoot everybody that's a dangerous person in Detroit.
I'm not going to be some fucking vigilante
Charles Bronson in fucking Death Wish going out there and protecting people and shooting people and some guy's choking a hooker and I go out and blow his head off from behind or whatever. I'm not going to be doing that kind of stuff. So it's not – I can't make – Me having
dude,
a gun.
I don't know why.
There,
I don't know why.
Public.
Because if you did, it wouldn't be your fault anyway, right? Like Sam Harris says, that you got no choice
no,
in the matter. With,
no, we're
what
not
going to
get into that quite yet. It's
completely out of your power, and it wouldn't be your fault anyway, even if you did do it.
You
right?
Even Listen, right? you're misquoting it.
Dude, but I got a bunch of shit written down about that video, man. I definitely want to dip into it a little bit. So
okay.
But yeah, I mean, you know.
But anyways, I wanted to say one thing more about the gun stuff was when I was talking about getting the CPL, and me and my wife were debating back and forth about it. She was like, she said we've had some pretty humdinger fights through our history, our 12, 13 years together. And she said there's been times she goes, we've always had a loaded gun in the house, but she doesn't know how to use it.
She doesn't trust herself.
It's a pistol grip. Yeah, dude, listen to this. It's a pistol grip pump, and she don't know how to rack it. She don't know how to use it. She doesn't know where the safety is. She's never shot it.
Yeah.
And I've tried to get her to shoot it. We'd go out to my parents out in the country and stuff, but she won't shoot it. And she's, you know, I think she shot guns before, but she said if she had a pistol revolver, she would know how to use that. She goes, she would be afraid that she would shoot me in an argument, like if she would come home hammered
well,
from a party,
you know,
and she had a gun accessible. Yeah. She said if she got mad enough, she said she thought she could shoot me. And I said, well, isn't that just great? I was like, that made me feel real secure that I got, you know.
I live with a very dangerous woman.
Yeah.
You better check her diary, dude. You better see what's going on.
I know. Kind of scary.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I that's the point, man. If she thinks that she could be driven to the point of using that thing on you, then it's probably a good idea not to have one.
I gotta have a gun she doesn't know how to load and
buy one of those lock boxes that require like a fingerprint or something. You just put your thumbprint on it and it opens up, it unlocks.
Right.
Hasta la vista, baby.
But you know, you should know how to operate one, man. I mean, I think that's especially if you're living in a place that where it's questionable or whatever in terms of your safety, but you know.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of places
like that. What's that?
There's a lot of places like that, man. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean,
I've always had the ability to protect my home, but I've never carried a gun, you know, outside of the home for protection. You know, I've never felt like I needed to, but you know, living in Detroit, I gotta admit, it does give you cause for pause or whatever, and you think about it, and it is a little, can be, you know, pretty deadly around here, and you know, it makes you think about
a
lot of things.
Yeah.
You know, but the only
we're going down to see a jazz show when my wife's sister comes into town, so we're going to be in Detroit about five times in the next few weeks. So.
Well, you know, one of the days when we're not out of town or whatever, you know, just give me a text me or whatever, and shoot on over, and we'll have a few beers and hang out or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, that
sounds good.
I'll let you know when we're
down there, man, and I don't know. Maybe we can figure that out or something. I don't know. But that's the thing about Detroit is, I mean, even in spite of all the craziness of that city, it's still got a certain coolness to it, man. There's some good things that go on in that city, and there's even a culture that's downtown that, you know, the downtown area is nice, man. It's got all the theaters and Comerica Park where the Tigers play, and Ford Field is right next to it. You know, there's some nice areas in downtown, things like that. You know, so
on the river, they've really made the river fun.
Vibe about Detroit,
the river walk and everything.
Yeah, man. I mean, there's
You can walk all the way up to Belle Isle now on that river walk. It's awesome. It's beautiful.
There's such a dichotomy to it. It's a beautiful area. It's right along the Detroit River. But it's dangerous, man. You know, you got to be careful when you hit certain neighborhoods, you know.
You know, like they call us the Paris of the Midwest.
All you need is Eiffel Tower, man.
Yeah, our Eiffel Tower is the Fisher Building, I guess. But yeah, that what I was going to say about the CPL. One last thing on that is the only thing is you can't drink anything. You can't have any alcohol in your system at all, right, when you're carrying. So you can't even go to a restaurant and have one beer and be carrying.
Right.
So
so
that pretty much freaking counts.
But, you know, I mean,
my advice to you, start drinking heavily.
For them to be able to, you know, arrest you if they feel like it. You know,
right.
that's just one of the stipulations of if you've got a gun, this is one of the ridiculous things. If you've had a sip of beer, I can, you know, throw you in jail for it. But, you know, again,
right.
Understandable, man. I don't want some dude that's all loaded, you know, yahooing with a fucking AR, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Or even a pistol, you know, throwing a six-pack down and then wandering around, driving around, or wandering around the city with a fucking 40 on his hip, you know. I mean, so that's a reasonable law, you know.
I can't stand semi-automatic pistols anyways when people are drunk or not. They have a tendency to go off, you know, and shoot them when they're jerking around with them, you know. You always hear people with semi-autos. That's one thing I always liked about revolvers. You don't have to worry about accidentally firing, you know.
Yeah.
It seems like
you're right.
Semi-autos, man, you always got somebody shooting themselves or shooting somebody else accidentally because, you know, misfired or whatever.
I got a 40,
oh, yeah,
man,
I don't like
and
that.
The safety on it is pretty ridiculous. The safety on it is right on the handle, so like the spot between your thumb and index finger would click, and then the second one is on the trigger.
Oh.
That's the safety for my 40. Some lady goes, well, what happens if a kid gets a hold of this? And the guy goes, well, obviously, you're not going to let a kid getting a hold of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, some of the simple requirements, I think, for owning guns, man, you should have a safe. It should be required that you own a safe for guns.
Right.
You know, and the thing that I see is there's no accountability for it. And this is going to sound cold-blooded, but you see a lot of these people getting killed and their family members. It's a brother accidentally killing his, his sister or killing his kid.
Playing around with the gun.
Right, the kid finding it and shooting his uncle, shit like that. Those people still need to be held accountable for that crime. I mean, they left the pistol out. It should be a minimum of a manslaughter charge against every single time that happens. I realize it's a terrible family event, but that's the only way that you're going to get people to start, maybe not even, I don't know, but to start thinking, man, maybe I shouldn't leave that fucking pistol sitting next to the couch while my 5-year-old nephew's wandering around, you know? And that happens very often. I mean, there's so many instances of just no one giving a fuck about their gun, leaving it out while kids are around and whatever else, you know? That's fucked up.
Right.
So,
yep.
I don't know, man. It's not a simple issue, that's for sure, and I don't think it ever will be. It's always going to be pretty crazy, and a lot of gun yahoos are anti-government. You know, they're scared of the government, and I can kind of see that, man. Sometimes when you're talking about the police, how heavy-handed they've gotten, and you know things like that, man. I mean, there's some cause to be concerned on top of it.
Yeah,
you know,
but the whole thing is you're never going to have the. I mean, I know in total amount of guns we got them outgunned. But you're never going to have, as far as firepower, you're not going to have the military, the ATF, the, you know, the DEA, all that, whatever. You're never going to, and the CIA, you're never going to have all them outgunned. It's just, it's just stupid. You know, I can't.
And it would be less them than it would be the fucking Blackwaters, the fucking, you know, the Blackwater, you know, all the,
underground stuff.
You never know if they're, you know. So I don't know, man. You know, but it is scary, dude. Now, I keep talking about that cop block page on Facebook.
Right.
It's got almost 700,000 people following it now. And almost every single day there's some insane story coming off of that of some crazy brutality upon some innocent persons. A lot of them are mentally retarded, whatever else, man. They're going to town.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, sir.
You know, it's killing people for no reason. They're showing people being killed with handcuffs on.
Those things
shit
have been going on for a very long time, but, you know, because of social media and stuff now, we're able to see it a lot more.
Yeah,
it's
I agree.
It's getting out there.
How many times have you seen on the cop locker or some of those like that where a retarded person is shot and killed because the police, you know, he's doing something weird and they don't know what he's doing? So they don't know he's retarded, and they shoot him, or they beat him to death, or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, or he has autism, and they just beat the guy to death, or whatever, because he won't comply. He won't put his hands behind his back when they're trying to cuff him. They just kick the shit out of him until he's dead or fucked up.
Was it the first guy that boiled the skin off of an inmate?
Yeah, that just happened not too long. He was they were bringing him in for processing, I think, and they kept pouring hot water on him to de-louse them or quote-unquote cleanse them, you know? And it boiled the skin right off. Peeled it right off.
Jesus Christ.
It's fucked up. Yeah. There was one today that was showed in Crusher. I don't know if you should like the site. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it's called Cop Block, but there's one today or yesterday where this partially mentally retarded guy, the cop saw a bulge in his pants, and they went over and confronted him because he had a bulge in his pants. And they beat the shit out of him. He was mentally retarded. He couldn't explain. He had a colostomy bag in his pants. And they showed
isn't that a daisy?
And after pictures of the dude, and his head looked like a big grape, man. It's just fucking. And he couldn't explain
that's
to him. It was a fucking colostomy bag that he's carrying around. They just pummeled him. And that was just on the, you know, just on and on. Every day, I don't know, man. I think my biggest concern about big government is right there.
And I agree with you, Dennis. It's horrible and it sucks, but the answer is not to give that guy a gun so he can shoot the cop.
You know,
I agree with that.
If that guy would have had a gun on him, it wouldn't have helped him at all. Matter of fact,
he would probably
have got him killed.
Yeah. Everybody's so concerned with, you know, the citizens owning guns or doing with their guns, you know. Look at who we're giving the guns to.
Right.
You know, I think that needs to be looked at a little, you know, more than what the rest of America's doing.
Not just guns, friggin' fighter jets, everything, missiles.
Right.
I mean, we're going to arm terrorists, you know, terrorist groups we're going to arm now.
Right.
I mean, we did years ago.
That's fucked up is they're talking about controlling gun control one way or another, whatever it may be. But at the same time, we're loading, you know, assault weapons off on Syrian terrorists. We're restricting it in our own country, but flooding another country with guns. It doesn't compute, man. It does not make sense that we're doing both of them.
I mean, like more right here at home with these renegade, you know, police officers that are using these tasers and guns on people that, you know, that you see on Cop Block every day. Every day, like you said, every day is something new with them. And, you know, we need to look at the people that are in power, that are allowed to have the guns. You know, what are they doing with them? And how can we, you know, address that situation?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, the picture right on their site, their main profile picture, whatever it is, it says, you know, a badge doesn't give you extra rights.
Right.
And that's what I agree. I mean,
that's
you're there to protect and to serve, man, not to beat the fuck out of them. You know?
If they commit a crime...
I mean, unnecessarily.
If they commit a crime because they're able to lock somebody up in handcuffs and boil their skin off in a prison...
They need to go to jail.
They need to be prosecuted in the same way that
if you found
a guy that had boiled the skin off of somebody that he had kidnapped, it's the same fucking thing. I mean, they don't do that. Yeah, they just get fired or they get suspended or if they do get prosecuted, it's very limited jail time or, you know, they get probation.
It's so rare. It almost never do they go to jail for killing.
And then they want their badge back, or they want to come back, or you know, it's like.
One of the few, the big ones was in Detroit. It was the Buxton and Nevers. You remember how long those guys went to jail for killing Malice Green? Didn't they serve about 4 or 5 years or something? They served quite a bit of time, but I mean, they basically got charged with. I think they got convicted of murder.
Did they?
Basically.
I'm not real familiar with that.
It was either that or definitely like an aggravated manslaughter with intent to kill or something like that. You know, it was really bad. I'm not sure. I think one of them did a lot more than the other. And the other one, I think one of them might have died in jail. But I know they did. I think they did at least 4, 5, 6 years, something like that. And then one might have did like 7 or 8 years. I have to research that because that was a while ago. That was like mid-90s. But yeah, they just got him, and they just basically beat him to death, cuffed him, and just beat him to death. So you know, they tried to say the same thing. They said, "Oh, he had cocaine in his system," and you know, but then you see the pictures of him, and he's just like a lumpy, bloody pulp. You know, and I'm I'm like, thank God if he had some narcotics in his system. Maybe it stole some of the pain, you know?
Yeah, I think it was the two cops that beat that homeless guy to death was wanting their jobs back. They had a chart in the courtroom of how many times he called out for his dad or begged him to stop beating him. Like the number was way up there. I mean, you got a grown ass man, homeless, you know,
right,
probably in his 50s and 60s, being beat so senseless that he's screaming for his father, you know, and they just beat him to death.
Yeah.
That's horrible, man.
Almost every day, man. This is one that just came up today on RawStory.com. Chicago police killed 95-year-old World War II vet with beanbag gun. They couldn't subdue a 95-year-old man in a retirement home. They had to shoot him with a beanbag gun.
That's downright pathetic, man. I don't care if the guy's wielding a friggin' samurai sword that he had from fucking World War II that he got off some Japanese soldier. I mean, what the hell? You can't just rush a guy. I mean, come on.
They would have killed him if he had a weapon.
Jesus Christ.
They shot him with a beanbag. Obviously, 95. Those things are high velocity, you know. If he had a weapon, he'd be dead.
It probably caused internal bleeding on him.
Oh, listen,
you know,
to the reason why. Says against six
what?
Police officers accused of killing her father with beanbag rounds after he refused to go to the hospital.
If you ain't going to the hospital,
you don't go to the hospital, we're
going to
kill you.
Wow.
Right. That is insane, man.
I want you to kill every golfer on the course.
But if I kill all the golfers, they're going
to
lock me up and throw away
the
key.
Here. It says, responding to the 911 call, officers were unable to persuade Rana, is the guy's name, to come out of his room. And after conferring outside of his room, the officers decided to take him by force.
Right.
95-year-old. They actually had a meeting about it outside the dude's room and decided to go in and shoot him with a beanbag.
Right.
Shotgun. It fires from a 12-gauge shotgun.
Jeez. That's insane.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so I don't, you know, I think it goes back. We've talked about it a little bit before. All the, you know, we're fighting so many wars all over the world. When they get done with all these military vehicles, these weapons, they don't have anywhere to put them, anywhere to go. They bring them, they ship them back, and they're giving them out to all these police forces all across the country. And our police forces are becoming military units now. I mean, they've got tanks, they've got grenade launchers, they've got these fucking pain dishes now where they can point a dish at you and cause your skin to burn, feel like it's burning. Crazy shit. So there's been an escalation in what happened to Barney, you know, Barney and his from like Mulberry or whatever, you know. I mean, you look at even cops in the 60s TV
Barney
show.
Fife.
Yeah, Barney Fife,
yeah.
And, you know, the neighborhood cop. He wandered around, you knew who he was, and you know, and he carried a sidearm and maybe a baton. But, you know, now they look like fucking stormtroopers, man. You know? I mean, head to toe. So, I don't know, dude. It's concerning.
Maybe that 95-year-old guy, maybe they needed to do that toe. Maybe he was like friggin' Bruce Lee's twin brother or something. Or
he was in a wheelchair, man.
He had the hands of death.
95,
He was in a wheelchair?
Let me see if he was in. Well, let me check. Either way, 95. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean,
95,
sorry,
man. You know?
It was Bruce Lee.
Even if he was in a – more so, you know, if he was in a wheelchair, they didn't have to do that. You know, he's already in a wheelchair.
Right.
He's just rolling out. He's 95, like you said.
Right. Enough of them. It sounded like they just – I mean, even, you know, if they had to slap him upside the head or something to get him under control, but – He didn't want to go to the hospital, so they killed him.
I think we
life
I
is
think we have a little off.
What's
that? We have a little audio. We have a little audio. What was his name? Ran?
That was his last name. Rana or something.
Rana.
They were
yelling inside in his room. They're like, Mr. Rana, come out. And he refused to come out, so they went into the audio.
I think it's more like a gun sound. Actually, they were. That would have been the proper thing to do if need be, lay into him a couple times. But again, 95 man, 95
right.
years old. Well, and I tell you,
what state was that?
Chicago. It was in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know,
crazy
everywhere, dude. You see that cop lock, and that shit's happening all over the country, all over the country, and
right.
You know, there's an escalation by the anti-government nuts, and there's an escalation by the cops.
Right.
You know, it's like they're pushing some sort of confrontation somehow. I don't know. I mean, it's pretty crazy, because there's so many goddamn guns. You got all these nuts getting a hold of them and going off, you know, killing people because they didn't get laid or whatever.
Did you see that one video of the guy? I don't know if he had a CPL or whatever. He was carrying a gun, and a cop pulled him over. It was two guys in the front seat. It was just a routine traffic stop, supposedly. And the guy was getting the guy's information, everything, the cop. And the passenger got out, had a 45 or something, 40 cal on him, semi-auto. He comes around and just starts unloading into the cop.
Yeah.
The cop's got a tan. He's trying to get his gun out of his holster, and he shoots him a couple times. And the cop starts running from him, and he's chasing him. And you can hear the guy going, "What now, motherfucker? What now?" And he's got his gun in the air. Boom, boom, boom. The cop's just pleading for his life, screaming. And he's trying to yell on his radio. He's screaming for his life, and it was about 2 months ago, but it was pretty brutal. And a lot of I have no idea where it was at. A lot of
state cop got killed here in Michigan not too long ago.
A lot of the pro police sites will put those videos up, to get sympathy for the police.
And
you know what, man?
It's a dangerous job. There's no doubt about it. It's a dangerous job, and it's a difficult job. But abusing and beating the fuck out of people and killing them out of process,
right.
whatever that may be, doesn't improve that situation one bit, one iota.
No. Causes lots of
makes it worse.
Aggression on both sides, and they have the authority, they have the power, and they have to get more, you know, empathy in them. They're the ones that need, you know, more training, more empathy. They have to be more diligent, they have to be more even tempered and stuff. It's not, you're always going to have goofy people, you're always going to have people intoxicated, you're going to have retarded people with mental problems out there. I mean, you know,
people out of control, you know.
They're not
going to
get better. The only way it can get better is if they get better, the police. I mean, they can't.
Right.
You know, they're always
going
to have
people. They set the standard. If they start standing down and making it readily apparent that, hey, we're getting rid of these fucking tanks and these RPGs and all this, you know, we're making an effort to try and not be so menacing and lethal in your own community, then maybe things would ease up a little bit.
Right. Crusher, I was going to ask you, how is it down there in Waco, Texas? You guys all walking the streets with hunting rifles and bow and arrow, you know, bow and arrows on your back or crossbows and shit?
No, I haven't seen any of that yet.
No.
No one open carries down there or anything? Not like that?
Not like that. I haven't seen anybody with the rifles over their shoulders yet.
Yeah.
Texas is an open carry state, aren't they?
I'm pretty sure they are.
I think
it probably is.
I'd be surprised if it's not.
I'm going to tell you one thing about Texas, man. They don't play around down there in the judicial system. I mean,
no.
Good God.
Well, they got a lot of
kids people away
out
from
of
the
control.
Minor marijuana charges and stuff. They just put people away for a long time.
Yeah.
It's just crazy how they do down there.
That's why, you know, I have such a stance against that, too, as well, because, you know, like you said, the
these little misdemeanor marijuana things that they're locking people up for. You know, you're just taking up room with a bunch of non-filing offenders, you know.
Yeah.
Or people
that
have drug addictions that need the, you know, they need proper help. And, you know, we're just wanting to throw them in jail and, you know, they clean up while they're in there or, you know, get even more access to what they're hooked on in there and come out just as fucked up as they went in.
Yeah,
you know?
Or worse. They learn a lot of bad things in there usually, you know.
You know, and, you know they're... You know,
right.
They're not adding, you know, once they get that offense, you know, that's on their record. Now it's going to be hard for them to get a job. It's going to follow them the rest of their life. You know, it stays on record, you know, because of something they needed help for that, you know, they're just punished for it. And
yeah, it's
taking up a lot of room,
taking
up a lot of money, and it could be used to,
exactly.
You know, it could be done a lot differently.
So do we ever find out what happens, Dennis? Like if marijuana gets legally federally, are they going to let all these people out of prison that are on marijuana charges? What happened in Colorado?
They're still in prison,
Denver,
dude. They're still in prison.
Denver, in Colorado?
They won't.
Yeah. Can you believe that? Some dude could be staring out of his cell, looking through the bars of his cell, outside the walls of the prison, and there could be a group of people smoking weed with no problem for the exact same reason he's in prison for.
And they're not going to let him out because of that.
You know what I'm saying? This is an example.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he could be staring out at people smoking weed just outside the prison wall, and he's sitting inside it doing time for the exact same thing they're standing there smoking down about. You know, it's fucked up. They should let all those guys go. If it was just an offense, a marijuana offense, period, all those fuckers should be booted immediately.
Trafficking or possession. You know, it's ridiculous. The whole thing is ridiculous to lock people up for selling it, using it, anything.
Right.
I mean,
what is it, man?
Right.
Yeah. But you see, since weed's been legalized in Colorado, crime's gone down 10%. The half the tax revenue for weed goes to the schools, and they've gotten, I think it's $20 million this year alone in tax revenue off that's going to the school system from weed. I mean, it's a massive windfall for Colorado. And all these people predicting doom and gloom and fucking chaos and society breaking down, the very opposite has happened. Crime has gone down 10%.
We've known this for decades, and we've not done it.
There's living proof of it right there. So it's over.
Right.
I believe it was like 12% crime has gone down compared to this time last year in almost every single category.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, come on, man. It's obvious, painfully obvious.
Well, what
painfully
about drunk
obvious.
Driving deaths? Has the drunk driving deaths went down?
I don't know, man.
I'd like to see the numbers on that.
That'd be interesting to see if that also went down. I bet there's a correlation there, too. I wouldn't be surprised.
Even if it's minor, it's still significant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I bet you the numbers of people that would quit drinking if weed were legal wouldn't be that high. I mean, people
they probably drink less, though. I bet a lot of people drink less.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, because a lot more
people
are smoking it now than that normally would have. They feel, you know, more comfortable in their environment to do it and, you know, without the risk. So I think that's helped the smokers
People that both drink and smoke pot, if they're out and they know they're going to drive, they probably would drink less and smoke. Instead, probably, I would imagine. But, I know one thing that has increased is the number of late-night 7-Eleven visits for Fritos and Munchies. And there it goes.
did you hear about the
Slurpee sales that shot through the roof?
The little Girl Scout at a set-up shop in front of one of the marijuana dispensaries in Colorado.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
knew about
the
munchies and everything.
Right.
So, yeah, she got a lot of... I think she sold out pretty quick.
She sold, like, 5,000 boxes of cookies in, like, a week or something.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, she's pretty young. She's like 9 or 10 years old.
I think they booted her, though. I think the Girl Scouts told her she needed this. They didn't want her setting up in front of weed shops and made her move because it got so much notoriety.
Right.
She's a very smart business lady.
Yeah, smart. I hate to change the subject, but I'm trying to transition into.
But you're going to?
The video. Did you get a chance to watch any of that video, Crusher?
I watched that whole thing.
I'm in the middle of a move, so my cable and my Wi-Fi has been shut off, and I'm relying on T-Mobile's 4G network, which is pretty shitty everywhere. So my internet is
quit praying on me,
every half hour. So I was not able to watch it.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Do you want to give them the Reader's Digest version, Dennis, or do you even know?
I mean, you know as much as I do about it now, you know, or probably maybe more, I mean, considering you sent it to me. But he's basically
right.
Sam Harris. You know, he's one of the obviously the prominent atheists in the world, and him and Dawkins now, and you know, of course, Hitchens is dead. But he was giving this, it was only about an hour-long speech on how, about regarding free will. And he basically is stating that there is no free will, that every single decision that you make comes into your head spontaneously, and therefore you don't create those thoughts or consciousness, so it's basically predetermined. You don't create those thoughts. They pop into your head without a creation.
Yeah, he doesn't say predetermined, but it kind of feels like that. But
well, that's kind of what he's saying here. I wrote
down
some of the quotes.
That's how you took it. Yeah, that's how you took it.
One of them says is, either our wills are determined by prior causes, a long chain of prior causes, your childhood, basically, right?
Right.
Or
we're not just that, it's everything. It's not just your childhood.
I'm writing down
it's
what he said.
It's your biology, it's your genetics. Yes, everything.
Genetics,
everything.
Right. Or we're the product of
everything.
Chance, and we're not responsible for them or some combo thereof. But this is the thing, man. He's writing it all to kind of predeterminism because of your environmental factors and genetics. And I agree with that. I agree with the fact that what comes into your life is because of what you surround yourself with, and maybe because of your mom and grandparents giving you whatever, you know, tendencies or physical characteristics they made.
It all affects your decision-making process. Basically.
Right.
I mean, everything you've experienced
right.
in your
But what
life.
He says is because...
That's not even, yeah, it's not even that, though, yeah.
But what he
not,
says, because of consciousness is not create... He says that, like, consciousness, when you get thoughts, you know, they come in spontaneously into your head. And basically... Therefore, you can't be, I mean, and this is what I got from it, that you can't be held accountable for your actions. And he used the example of a serial killer over and over again.
Right.
And he said,
well,
now this
think
is
about
the thing
the,
that got me, and what really, and another, and here's another almost direct quote. He called it a generic serial killer. I don't know if there's any of us out there, but he said, let's use the example of a generic serial killer. I mean, that's how blasé we've gotten about this shit anymore. He's giving it, you know, he uses serial killer
generic
over and over. And he calls them generic. But all
right,
so right. He says, you know, a guy with bad genes, unhappy childhood, and there's a car alarm going off down the street where he doesn't sleep all night long. These events precede any conscious decision to act. So.
Right.
So he's basically blaming the environment, the genetics, and his childhood for the acts that happen at this very point in time that
he's not responsible for. But you know he did not say that people should not be punished if they're killing people. I mean, that's not what he's saying at all. He's trying to explain where this stuff comes from. And a lot of the stuff that he's saying, all the neurologists and stuff already know that. They could tell a split second,
he's a
neuro, a second or two.
He's actually
he,
a,
yeah,
a
he's a
neuroscientist.
They can tell what you're going to do even before you do it. So if they can put probes on your brain and they know what you're going to think, what your decision will be before you make it, then there's no way that you have control of that. I mean, there's no way
right.
you can know something before you know it. And you have no choice when you have a decision that I'm going to take my right hand and push the red button instead of my left hand and push the blue button. They already know a second or two before you're going to do it. That means you have no choice. They already know you're going to do it.
Who's
that,
they, though? What are you saying? Who's they in that
the
example?
The scientists, when they're doing
they
those experiments.
Know. How would they
and,
know?
And it's like they've proven it through experimentation. When they put,
I don't know
they
about that, man. That's premonition, right?
That's not premonition.
What he came to a basis of, here's another direct quote from him. He says, you don't know what you're going to do next. Because of the constant flow of consciousness, and going back to your example, you know, you got a red button and a blue button in front of you. Which one are you going to press? You don't really know until the point that you do it, that your consciousness creates that decision, and then you go ahead and do it. So I get that. But this is what he removes from it, and this is the basic fallacy for me in his argument, is that the brain
can't
take.
You said that wrong,
take,
though. You said
let,
that
let
wrong,
me say
Dennis.
It, though. No, I don't think it is at all. That's exactly
no, what you just said.
You
was
don't
wrong.
Know what
you...
you're going to do next. That's word for word what he said in that video. And
well, you
I
don't.
Mean, you don't? I mean, you really? You didn't know what you're
if
going
you,
to You didn't know that you were going to call into the show?
If you plan something a week
right?
from now.
I mean,
even
you, to boil it down to some basics, man. You didn't know that you were going to call into the show?
Listen,
so you, there's some forethought.
Even if you
and
plan
this is,
something
this is
week
what
in
I
advance,
say is basic fallacy. Let me say, and then you can then you can debate and beat me down on it. But this is it: the basic fallacy in this argument is that the brain can't take all these environmental factors into account and still be able to filter out the possibility to commit murder. I mean, how many millions of people went through that exact example that he's talking about? Bad genes, unhappy childhood, car alarm going off down the block.
No,
most people don't go out and commit murder, right? Because they have a filter there. It stopped their brain, filters that, and decides not to go out and kill people.
And if it's a filter, then they had that genetic predisposition to not be a serial killer. So they didn't have the same identical settings and same identical everything as the serial killer.
So what, this is Gattaca shit, dude. This is Gattaca shit. You ever see that movie Gattaca?
I'm telling you, dude.
This is all he's talking about is Gattaca. But I tell you, this is what he's saying, that there are a particular set of circumstances that create a mass murderer. A particular set of circumstances that
circumstances.
Create a mass murder that can be identified.
You could have somebody with the same identical structure and genes, have the same identical upbringing, with maybe abusive parents, unhappy childhood, maybe some religious programming and torture. You know that you're sinful, that you're evil, you need to be saved, kind of like a Jeffrey Dahmer childhood or whatever. And you could have one slight, subtle difference. One person, maybe Jeffrey Dahmer, you have the same exact, identical life, physical structure, mental structure, same upbringing, everything, which is weird, but same identical everything. But when at 10 years old, Jeffrey Dahmer did not have this one thing happen that the other kid, that his clone happened. At 10 years old, he got invited to a YMCA Big Brother camp, and he met a guy that befriended him and got him into playing youth basketball or whatever. And it got him out of being a loner and, you know, torturing animals and shit when he was doing when he was 10, 11, 12 or whatever. I mean, it's just that's all it is. It's one fucking thing. One thing different can set you off the path to not be that. That's why there isn't a million serial killers.
I don't agree with that at all. And what he's saying basically is you have no control of your thoughts. Now, at a creationist level, yeah, you don't.
You don't have a
I mean, they pop into your head. You know, they're popping into your head as you go along, as seconds tick away. Your consciousness keeps going along, and you've gotten certain things that pop into your head that drive you through your day, right? But what he's saying is, you have no control over that. That you can't change your mind. You can't stop and think about your conscious flow of thoughts.
I think that's bullshit, dude. Because there is no changing your mind. Let's say you want to go out, you got this craving all day for Chinese food. All day long.
He uses
you're watching
this
you,
example,
you,
doesn't he?
No, this is a different example. Okay. All day long you want Chinese food. All day. I'm craving fucking Chinese food. I gotta have Chinese food. All day long. And your wife's at work, and you're waiting for her to get home at 5 o'clock, whatever. And she gets home, and you're like, man, I want Chinese food. You don't tell her nothing yet. You just want it. You know it. You're craving it all day. And you're like, when she gets home, first thing we're going to do is we're going to get cleaned up, and we're going to go to the Chinese restaurant on the corner, whatever. She gets home, and she goes, babe, she goes, if you love me, I want to get Mexican food tonight. I want to go out to eat. I'll treat you. I'll pay for Mexican food. Then all of a sudden you're like, she's going to pay for it. Oh, okay. I've been craving Chinese food all, but then you make the decision to go get Mexican food. That doesn't change the fact that all day long you were craving Chinese food. You still want it. You still are craving it. But now you've changed your mind that you're going to get Mexican food. You're going to go with her to make her happy. And you're like, okay, so you make that whole, you think you're changing your mind and everything. But all those circumstances up to that point that you're a sensible guy, you were raised good, you raised to respect women, your wife, everything that ever happened in your life up to that point caused you to be able to change your thought, and that thought came to you and you did not know that thought. That thought, you did not author that thought. That change of mind for you to go to the Mexican restaurant with your wife after you've been craving Chinese food all day long, you did not author that thought. You didn't think that thought. You think you had a choice, but you really don't. You can't say no, we're going to Chinese.
Come on, man.
We have this illusion.
I've been thinking Chinese all day long, and we're going Chinese. Fuck that Mexican food.
You're not getting it.
I want some
you're
fucking kung pao.
You're not getting it, dude. We have this illusion of choice, but we really don't have a choice. We're going to do what we're going to do. We keep thinking we have this choice. Your choice takes you down an infinite number of paths.
And it's by choice. It's by that filter that says, should I go out and murder that motherfucker, or should I do something else?
And if you don't murder the motherfucker, you weren't ever good in the first place.
And this is the thing that he concentrates on, is the exact, and this is funny because he's an atheist, the exact creationist moment of consciousness. His entire speech was about the exact birth of your thought process and nothing afterwards.
But he's
nothing that could determine or filter or change, which is the filter in your head, dude. That's why, as a kid, you put your hand on the stove as you don't know any better, and it's been filtered. And that's of course it's ingrained in your mind now, but it's through the choice of making it in the first place. It's your choices. You chose to be here at this very moment to speak on this very subject on Blog Talk Radio, on Blisterfish, because of the choices you made throughout the day to get yourself to this very point in time.
That's my belief. It's all about choices. He's saying you don't have any choices. I say it's all about choices.
Every single bit of your life is with the choices you've made.
You sound like a religious person, though.
No, it has nothing to do with religion. What Harris was trying to say is that even when you make that choice, when you change your mind,
it's going to be because of another factor that already predetermined that.
So you, I mean, I get what he's saying. Where you have a choice, but you don't. At the
same time. Maybe we're talking about the same thing. I don't know. I mean, but the choice. You know, your life is an infinite amount of paths in front of you. And you look at it like maybe a network of veins on a flat plane that goes out forever, and they intersect and they go back and forth and they diverge, and each of those intersections is a decision point in your life. It's like a web, and every single as you move forward, each of those intersections is a decision point. You move to the right or left or keep going forward or sideways or whatever else. But each of those intersections is a decision point going off into some other direction.
I think it's an illusion.
If he decides not to take her out to the Mexican restaurant, instead go to Chinese anyway, it's going to come back to where he had a choice, again, not to go to the Mexican place and instead go to the Chinese place, whereas, you know, the original story was he decided he's going to take her there because of, you know, how, you know, in the childhood, how you're raised to treat women and all that. But had he chosen at the last second, I'm going to go to the Chinese anyway, it's still going to be because of something in the past that you can attribute it to make that choice as well.
I'm not saying that environmental factors don't affect your decisions in your life. They completely impact them. Environmental being the people that surround you, that, you know, whatever, your activities in your life, your health, whatever else, they certainly affect your decisions. But they don't because they don't force them on you. There's a myriad of things that go into probably any decision you make in your life, and certainly environmental factors are one of them.
And that's exactly why he's saying you really don't have the choice.
But that is you're putting too much on environmental factors.
No, that doesn't mean that you're. I mean,
a lot of people have been exposed to atheist literature.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's a difference between them, and that goes back to that filter of taking all those things into consideration and making a decision off of you know, your environmental factors, your past knowledge of the situation, whatever else goes into the making that decision. Now that doesn't mean that it's a done deal. You know?
I think you need to read the book.
You know what? I looked at Sam Harris, and you know, one thought I really had, you know, he seemed a really nice guy and very articulate. I thought, you know, man, that dude needs to do some hallucinogens.
Oh yeah, man.
a little LSD would knock that shit out of the park, and it wouldn't be anything about some sort of point in very minute, you know, the creation of the thought process itself, because there's so much more than just that goes into everything. And if if he's thinking that just as soon as that thought is created, that it's a done deal, that's to me, that's still God. I mean, that's predetermined fate.
He's not attributing it to a divine being that there's no evidence for. He's attributing it to, I guess, an evolution process that there is evidence for.
Yeah, all right. But that's how they describe God, right? That's how religious people describe God, is they're running everything. And so all they're going to say to that is that, well, God's doing that. You know, God's
saying it's neuroscience.
That's where you're, you know. But
that we don't author our thoughts, and they, you know, that they can tell what we're going to decide before we do it. They hook people up to computers. They monitor.
Dude, there's nothing like that in that video, man. I don't know if
No, it was right in the middle, dude. He said that they have scientific facts. In neuroscience, they monitor people's brains. They can tell what they're going to choose before they choose it and what they'll choose when they're doing experimentation. They said they can tell. You don't offer your thoughts. They don't know where they come from. They know where they come from. His theory is it comes from genetics and from your life experiences and from everything.
You know where it comes from? That parallel universe, dude, that we talked about in this string theory shit, man. That's why they're talking about us being holograms and shit. So if that were the case, then maybe Maybe
well,
if that's the
that,
absolute
but...
truth, then he's right.
Right.
Because our actions and thoughts are being determined on a different plane of existence.
I think what he's saying is like even the fact that
you
even,
according to string theory,
that you even think that you even have a choice goes back to the genetics and, you know, to even be able to have the concept of being able to choose, period, is part of that. And that's, which is why you really don't have a choice when you think you do. I'm pretty sure that's what he's getting
but
at.
I tell
it,
you
all,
what, going back,
goes back to that.
Going back to, you know, Albert Hoffman's unbelievable, miraculous creation that he made in other natural byproducts thereof, you and I both know, Fester, that there are ways to deconstruct your thought process, and that is the very mode of being able to do so. And because
right.
of that, that in itself proves that your thoughts are not completely predetermined throughout the span of your life. Now, even up to that point, you're making a decision, hey, I'm going to do some mushrooms, and you eat those mushrooms, and it completely changes the way you think and feel about everything. Obviously, this hypothesis would be incorrect, right?
No, that doesn't prove it's wrong. All that means is you've added in another factor in yourself. You were predisposed to take that because you were open to experimentation, try new things. So you took
exactly.
it, and that's added into the scenario. And that brings you to a different thought pattern.
Okay,
now you're more open
it.
To pre-thinking.
All right.
It doesn't
but,
disprove it.
But the deconstruct part does go against his vein of thought of there's no choice. We have no choice from that beginning initial consciousness of what we do.
It seems like you do, but you really don't. I mean, when it boils down to it, it's kind of you know, you're gonna do what you're gonna do, and I've kind of been preaching that for years. I you know, I mean, people think they're making different decisions, and okay, all of a sudden, like he was talking about people that can stick to a diet real strictly and people that can't. You know, you say, well, he's got more willpower than the other person, and but a lot of it really has nothing to do with your willpower. It's just, you know, you've come to that point in your life, through all your life experiences, through your genetics and everything, that you're able to have that discipline to not eat chocolate fudge, hot fudge sundaes every day or whatever, and the other person that tries to do the same thing can't do it. It's not because they don't want to. It's not because they haven't thought about doing it. It's not because they don't really want it bad. It's just up to that point, everything that's involved, their genetics, their brain, their chemistry, their environment, everything, their whole life, and everything they've ever experienced came to the point where they are unable to fucking stick to a diet. And it's not what it really does when you think like that. Like he uses that serial killer example a lot. But what it does is, I think why he uses that, because it's the most extreme form of action or whatever that we could think of.
Right.
But it makes you able to sympathize and have empathy for people that you normally would never
killers.
Be able to have empathy for. Yeah. Well,
I mean,
do you deny that they're not made, that society doesn't make those, that religion hasn't warped people's fucking brains? And not just their parents treating them bad or their parents fucking
I agree with all that.
Everything,
man.
All chemicals, all the shit we put in our food and water and everything. You don't think we're making fucking serial killers out there as a society, as a culture? Everything we eat, everything on television, everything we put into people's heads is fucking, I call it a virus, a sickness of religion, a religious faith. That a lot of people can't handle it. Some people become like your mother-in-law, right?
What?
Healed, or, said things she
could heal.
Oh, yeah,
my stepmom. She had the brain cancer.
Stepmother-in-law. You know, in her mind, you know, it was good for her. You know, she thinks she was healed from that, and she doesn't give herself any credit for being healed from cancer and everything. It was all God, and, you know, in her mind, it's a positive story, and she kind of has a positive story, but for every person that's like her, you know, there's also people that are fucking warped and negative, and they have a lot. And I could probably, even if I knew her well and knew her whole life and knew her personally, I could probably find negative things that a religion has done in her, you know.
Oh, I could tell you 10 of them, you know, but
right.
She's still a nice lady.
So not everything
lady,
is positive.
You know.
And for every person that you think looks like they have a positive story to religion, so many other people are warped and they're psychotic, and they're basically almost schizophrenic. They're nuts because of religious, you know, the faith in the mind. It just, it breaks down your mind. I really think that one day they're going to find out that people who have a super strong religious faith to the point of fanaticism, they're going to find something physically wrong with their minds when it's left unchecked for years and years and years. It's almost like forced retardism. You know, they're in this fantasy land for so long, they don't know what reality is. They've lost like all sense of reality.
You know, that's going back to what he's talking about, and the thing that's for the whole Gattaca bullshit, and what this portends to, what it leads to, is genetic testing when you're born, and if you're predisposed for violence or murder, to be thrown into the chop. Yeah,
right.
We know you're going to murder someone, so chop, bye bye.
Well, Soylent Green, fucking right into the Soylent Green bin. That's what he's laid out right there too.
He's basically saying
that's genetic, and obviously environmental issues,
but genetics plays a strong part in predetermining who is going to be a mass murderer. And he names genetics over and over again in the instance of that mass murder. So let's test them when they're born and throw them into the big old meat grinder if they're predisposed for mass murder, right?
Well, I mean, that's where John Wayne is. I would say throw them in the meat grinder, but if they could have found out John Wayne Gacy was predisposed to a serial killer, and they could put him in a counseling when he was little and got him out of his environment that he was in when he was a little kid, maybe they could have saved 50 people's lives, you know? I mean, you know, I don't think it's all bad. I don't think we should sit there and say, stop science, stop investigating, stop
That's
learning about
I'm
stuff
saying,
because we're scared,
certainly
because we're scared
to
something
science,
bad
though.
Might
you
happen.
Know, you know me, man. I'm a science dude, but there are certainly dangers in science. The whole genetic thing of being predisposed to one thing or another, especially in terms of murder. I mean, I can maybe see in your genes, you're probably going to, you know, you got a 20% chance of cerebral palsy or whatever. But to say, you know, you're going to be someone that's predisposed to wear blue shirts, drive Dodges, and kill 20 people, I mean, you know, that's a scary supposition he's making there.
I think you're reading more into it. I think you're reading more into it than what he was saying.
I don't know, man. There was a part of it that
I had
Gattaca floating through my head as I'm listening to him talking about fucking predisposed genetics, you know, for a serial killer. I mean, that fucking was hit me over and over again. How he almost was being a proponent of genetic testing
is,
as a child for
so
things such
genetics.
As serial killers.
So many people are predisposed to be serial killers. I've said this many times to my wife. I said, under the right circumstances, I can easily kill people. I mean, you know, and it's not funny. I would have no problem killing somebody that broke in here if I was scared.
Well, right,
my house,
of course.
I can see myself getting angry enough if somebody said the wrong thing to my wife or my daughter, or didn't grab my daughter and shoved her or whatever. I could see myself beating somebody to death. I mean, and I'm out on the street. I mean, you know, I mean, you know.
Hey, I don't know if you heard, man, but that's illegal.
I know it's illegal.
I think it's illegal in 40 or 45 states. But
Hey. You know, you beat a guy to death because he shoved your daughter down. You beat him to death, and then all of a sudden that person's dad comes at you, and then you shoot him because you got your CDL. You kill him, and then you get in a standoff with the police, and you shoot a cop at your house. All of a sudden, you've killed three people in one day. Now you're a mass murderer, and you haven't even read the Sunday paper yet. You're already a mass murderer. I mean, you know,
go
I can
back
easily
and
see that's
watch
real
no
happening to a lot of people.
Man, because it was none of it was your fault, and you were predetermined to do that at that given time.
Right. Right. Yep. All the scenarios came into the perfect eye of the storm came on to where, I mean, that, you know, I think there's tons of people out there, if all the perfect scenarios came about, they would kill. I mean, there's a lot of people like that. I don't think I'm
but,
I'm
you know,
the only
I would agree with you to the point that there's a lot of fucked up people, and there are a lot of environmental issues that go into that. And you're absolutely right, man. TV and someone that watches TV all the time, they're fucked up, dude. I mean, if that's all they do is, you
right.
know, they sit around and press the remote buttons all the time, 24 hours a day. That,
right.
You know, that's,
oh, yeah, you know you're fucked up.
In for problems, you know. But, again,
right.
it goes back to what I was saying earlier. That's anything. Anything you do over and over again is going to brainwash you. I mean, religion, you go to church once a week, church activities and blah, blah, blah. You end up spending 10 to 15 hours a week. You know, you're going to be brainwashed into believing in the God. Or you listen to Rush Limbaugh every day, which many people do, man. They're brainwashed into believing Rush Limbaugh, the heroin addict, you know, the
right.
synthetic heroin addict. And whatever it is, man, you do it over and over again, and you're going to be brainwashed by it, no matter what it is. You get into this certain groove of believing, and it becomes a part of your consciousness, and you soak it in,
right.
and you make choices along the way of doing such.
Right.
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 That's what I say, at least.
I think you need to watch the video one more time.
I don't know, man. That's what I got. I watched that whole damn thing today, and I got about 3-4 pages worth of notes in the first 20 minutes, and it's kind of the same. I kept coming to the same conclusions as he was furthering his examples of the serial killer and other such you know mundane things like shirt color or whatever else. But
right.
you know, I to me it's he's missing the filter thing. He's assuming that as soon as that point of consciousness comes into your brain and you make a decision to act, that it's all over, that's it's said and done.
Will you admit if his discovery and his theory is true, that it will end religion, all religion will be done? If there is no such thing as free will, that it is done. There is no religion. There is no,
fuck, then people,
you know,
go out and start killing each other. It wouldn't matter, right?
Well, hey,
people start,
if that's the case, that's my whole thing about religion. If the only thing that's stopping you from killing is because of your religion, then I don't want you on the earth anyways. Get rid of the motherfucker.
I guess you're right with that.
I don't
want to
live
filter.
Around people that are going to kill unless they're religious.
I don't know,
dude.
I have a hard time believing I'm a robot, that it's all predetermined.
I think
you're not a robot.
No, I think your filter, depending on what your filter filters, is part of what he's saying as well. I mean, everything that you're including is included in that. Just
yeah,
to have
that
a filter
is, I mean,
to change your mind, depending on what your filter wants to keep and what it wants to reject, it's still going to affect the filter because of everything that's been, what he says, in your genetics and your DNA and your environmental experiences and all that. It's going to determine
right.
what you filter and what you don't as well.
Like Dennis, I ordered that book from that video, the book Free Will by Sam Harris. It's just a little pamphlet. It's not very big. And my whole thing is, okay, I supposedly made that decision to order that book. It came in the mail, and I'm going to read that book. And the thing is I'm doing that, and I've been guided all this way to do this stuff. Everything year after year builds up on it. Now, that's pretty radical. You got to admit, what he's supposing is a pretty radical friggin' idea.
Yeah,
and
that we're all robots.
No, it ain't all. Don't say it like that. And if I read that book, because I read that book, and if I believe that, that affects my thinking greatly. Now, what are the outcomes of that, my thinking changing, that I didn't believe this a year or two ago? Now I believe what he's supposing, and I believe like him. So what happens? What happens to my thinking? It changes a lot. All of a sudden, I become a radically different thinker. I have empathy for people that commit crimes. I have empathy for people that are down in their luck, that have had horrible things happen to them, and people that do horrible things, now all of a sudden I have empathy for them. I start thinking about, hey, maybe they shouldn't be in prison, maybe they should be in a mental health facility. maybe they need, you know, mental health. Maybe, hey, maybe we need to start helping kids get out of these bad situations when they're young instead of waiting until they're 16 and throwing them in a adolescent prison or whatever. You know, you start thinking different. Your thinking becomes different. My thinking has radically changed just over a couple of years, and part of it is because I'm exposed to all this different information. You know, and I could sit there and have pride in myself and say, well, it was just my idea to be exposed to all this new information and believe it. But really, it's just, you know, I mean, you're just going along and all this stuff is, you know, comes to you. I think it's my choice that I ordered the book. I did this. But I, you know what I'm saying? Everything that brought me up to that decision made me order that book, really. I didn't order the book because I was just a genius and I thought it up on my own, and you know,
I don't dispute that. I mean, environmental factors absolutely bring you to this point, but it's through those choices, and they influence your choices of what you do. But it's through knowledge, it's through past knowledge, learning, fucking hard knock living. You know what I'm saying?
It's kind of almost
taking some fucking hard knocks and knowing not to do it again.
It's almost kind of like the chicken or the egg. I mean, it's hard to,
You said, it affects our choices. Everything we do, everything we've been through, it affects our choices. And
I agree. But not to the point where you don't, and you're saying that the main word there is choices. I mean, you've got an infinite amount of choices, man. I could go out to head to the bar and get hammered, man,
but
I'm not going to.
But you're saying it's the same thing. It's in the same sentence. It's still being you're still attributing those choices to those predetermined factors because of everything we've experienced.
Environmental issues that influence your thought process. I agree with that.
Anything that influences your thought.
But it's really choices. The thought that made you. And Dennis, it ain't even and Crusher. It ain't even choices. You keep saying choices. What he's supposing is it's the thought that made you do the decision that you did. It's already been offered. You can't rethink it. What you get that thought in your head and you decide I'm going to the bar and getting hammered tonight, the decision was already made before you even had the thought. It was already there. You were already brought to the point of doing that before you decided you were going. You were already ready to go.
I can't be like, I'm going to go out and jump out of a plane instead. So, you know, go out and do a sunrise. You know, I've never done it before in my life, but so I can't make that decision.
You can do whatever you want.
You said you can do whatever you want. Then that's free will.
You can do whatever you want. But the thing that you do end up doing, you are going to do it anyways. That's the whole thing.
When I say choices, I'm using it with quotation marks. These choices that we have are because of everything that we're influenced by. The reason that we make these choices, in quotation marks. So, and the reality is, this what you said earlier. It's really a delusion that it's actually a choice, because any choice that you make is going to be because of everything that influenced us. So it's really not
because that synopsis fires in your that initial creative synopsis that fires in your brain to tell you to do that. Act upon that thought.
What do they say about people that are hardcore drug addicts? They always say this about people that can't kick drugs that are hardcore drug addicts. They always say they'll quit when they hit bottom, and if they do quit, they'll hit bottom. When they really want help, and when they really decide to quit, when they decide that they gotta quit and they've hit bottom, that's when they'll do it. And the reason that is. What the hell is this? Wow. Okay.
Dude, I don't know why you're surprised by that. You knew that was going to happen.
No.
You did that on purpose. You had no choice in the matter.
What the hell is that?
What are you doing, man? Is there something on your end?
I don't know.
Your voice sounds like shit, like there's some distortion coming from your phone or something.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on with this.
Is that a modem?
I don't know. No.
There it goes.
I just shut the computer off. It's just going crazy. I can't. I couldn't even turn the sound down on it.
Fuck, dude.
The point I was trying to make with the drug addicts is you're not going to quit until you hit bottom. They always say when they finally decide, they always say when they want to quit, that's when they'll quit. You can't somebody quit drugs. Well, of course, that's the obvious thing right there. They're going to do it when they want to do it. Why? Because that's when they came to the point where the circumstances in their environment came to the point where it allowed them to be able to quit. They're not going to do it until they get to that point. So that's why stuff never works. It never works till they get to the point where they're actually going to do it. When everything lines up and the stars all line up and all their circumstances line up with their biology, with their ability to have enough willpower, combined with their circumstances, combined with their life experiences, combined with their whatever, their gene makeup, with the people that are around, maybe they're more positive people at that point, people that will support them instead of trying to get them drugs. When they get to that point, that's when they're gonna, do it. And the reason why is because everything came up to that point, lined up to where they have the ability to do it, and they made they made the choice, but they probably made the choice many times before that, but everything didn't line up perfectly for them to be able to do that. So now they think they're making the choice. I made the choice. See, it's also self-centered and self-righteous. That's why I say it reminds me of religious faith. Look at God. God saved me from drugs. God delivered me. You're one step away from thinking like that when you say, I made the choice to get off drugs. I did it.
I think that the philosophy is too close to religion. He focuses on the creationism of consciousness. And in a lot of respects, he removes the personal responsibility for your actions, which is both religious.
Dude, he said many times we need to people that are mass murderers, people that are killers. We need to lock them up and keep them away from society to keep people safe. He's not saying feel sorry for serial killers and just let them run free of the streets.
I don't know. That's what it sounded like. He was talking about showing compassion to someone, murdering, and I have a hard time doing that, especially, serial killers and shit.
Right.
Maybe we look at them differently, that it wasn't their choice, but they were predetermined to go out and because of environmental and genetic issues, go out and murder those 20, rape and murder those 20 people. I compassion for those people would be, your compassion for them would be to have them treated. Obviously,
right.
And even on top of that, I believe some people deserve to die. It goes back to when we're talking about the death penalty. Should the death penalty happen? Probably not, because there's so many mistakes in it. But I believe there's people that deserve to die, man. If you're going out raping and murdering numerous people, you're a scourge on the face of the earth and need to go away one way or the other.
Right.
I mean, you should not be around. And he's in, to my view, he was preaching compassion for those people. And should they be treated absolutely, because they're fucked up,
I think it's kind of a let's understand why people are the way they are. And I don't think trying to figure that out is a bad thing. I mean,
No, I agree with that. I agree with that. I just don't agree with his assertions on it entirely.
Can we agree on this? Something definitely has to be done on the scientific end to find out why people become bad and do bad things. We've given religion thousands of years, and it hasn't got any better. It's gotten fucking worse. So, or at least it's been really bad. So, I mean, obviously religion is not going to do anything to help people become less violent.
Obviously, we completely agree about
that. Break laws. We understand. Atheistic countries all have the least crime. All the most highly religious areas are the most fucked up and highest murder rates and everything. So religion is fucked, dude. So we have to figure out. That's why when I heard that, dude, when I watched that video, the first time I was kind of like, I'm like, well, I don't know. Like I was kind of like you. The second time I watched it, I had kind of a eureka moment in it. And then the second time I watched it with my daughter, and her brain was smoking. And then this last time I watched it again today, and I was like, I just kind of verified what I thought. And so, I don't know, I believe what he's saying.
That's
so
cool. Yeah, I'm not opposed to hearing, I like hearing Sam Harris talk and all. That's the first time I've heard him speak in the free will.
He's definitely a bright guy.
You know. Yeah. Oh
right.
Yeah.
He's definitely a bright guy. He's no dipshit. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not disputing that, but not everything anybody says is accurate. You know, I'm not.
Right. I don't know.
Can't believe everything anybody says. And, you know, and you end up, you know, might as well start believing the Bible. Yeah, man.
Yeah,
so I don't know.
No
I mean, it, you know, it's interesting what he said. And for me, it was provocative because it fell into my realm of thinking, you know. But I'm almost diametrically opposed to my view is diametrically opposite of what he's saying there in some respects.
You like to think that you control everything and you control what you're doing.
I control my thought process, man. I certainly believe that I control my thought process. If I didn't, I'd be schizophrenic, right? There's your filter.
I think
if you don't have a filter, you're schizophrenic.
I think that you're confusing. I didn't go murder. I didn't treat my wife bad. I didn't steal. For all these things that you don't do that are wrong, I think you're confusing the fact that you're saying that that's your decisions and that's your filter and that's your willpower. But I think it's a lot more than that, and I think you're kind of selling it short of what it actually all is together.
I mean, I keep
hearing you're giving yourself a lot of credit for
that. Personal responsibility, dude. It's a complete removal personal responsibility. I made the choice.
Part of the reason why you are today is how you were raised, too.
But I'm the one making those choices, and they all come to fruition because of your environmental response. I mean, that part of it I agree with.
It's giving your parents credit. It's giving your school teachers credit. It's giving your community credit.
I agree with that. It's giving credit to all people. He's totally focused in on that moment of creationist thought, of when the very moment that consciousness or your thought is born, and at that point, that's all there is to it. That it doesn't go through some other process and it's just a free flow of thought. And it's not, man. You've got filters in your head that tell you right from wrong because of environmental issues, but you still have that choice to choose wrong. You still have that choice to put your hand on that fucking hot stove.
I don't think you still have that choice.
It still sounds
like you're agreeing, though. When you say that,
environmental factors that influence your choice, genetics influence your choices, but not to the point to where that thought is uninterrupted always into action, where the creation of that thought is always implemented into action.
If it's interrupted, it's going to be because of those factors that we talked about. It's all going to go back to the issues that influence us.
Crusher's got it. And the whole thing is you didn't author that thought. That's the whole thing. So if you don't author your thought, how can you say I'm totally responsible for my actions if you can't
you can author the thought of, man, I'd like to go out and kill that person, but you can filter that thought by saying I shouldn't do it because I'm a good person.
Because of your experiences. You're still in agreement.
I don't know. You're in agreement with me that it's a filter. It's the filter.
You're in agreement with me
that I'm saying it's all about your choices that you make. An infinite web lies out in front of you, and every single intersection of that web is a decision point in your life.
What goes through your filter is going to be because of those factors. The very fact that you have a filter, what it filters, is because of those factors. That's it.
7 years of college down the drain.
We're not going
to
solve it tonight,
that.
But I it's a good yeah. it's a good you know it's definitely a good conversation point. Maybe we'll readdress it at some time because I'm still not swayed. I agree with a certain aspect of it that your choices are swayed one way or another by environmental factors and other such things, but I'm still not to the point to where I don't have any, you know, control over my thoughts. I think that's
the control. How you control your thoughts is because of those factors.
I tell you, again, going back to it, I tell you, when you don't have control of your thoughts, that, you know, eat a little hallucinogens, and you got such a free flow of thoughts that you don't have any control of your fucking thoughts. Then you really know what it's like to not have control of your thoughts,
affect,
man, because they're flowing out of you a billion times faster than
that. That can affect your future thoughts.
Yeah,
that'll be an environment.
I would kill everyone in this room for a drop of sweet beer.
That could change your filter in the future.
You know the difference between that's where that filter is gone. Boom. Is that filter is removed. And I'm not saying you can't choose between right and wrong, because I certainly have never killed anybody or done anything close to a violent action while on hallucinogens, but there certainly is a free flow of thought that just, boom, flies through you way more than when you're sober.
The distortion of your thoughts while you're on those hallucinogens are still going to be your thoughts being distorted.
I don't know. I think it cleanses it all, man. It cleanses it. You've got something nasty from your past that's all stuck in you. You've been defiled. You've experienced pedophilia or abuse or that shit just cleanses the fuck out of you, man. It just boom. It opens everything up, and you see the true nature of so many things on it. And it's such a free flow that when you come back down to a sober level, like probably maybe all of us are right now, but there is a difference, and there is some sort of filter there that changes your consciousness, right? There's a filter that goes away. Those doors fucking open up like a motherfucker.
Everything that you experience
changes your filter.
Yeah, but it's still there. There's still a filter there, which goes back to my point. That goes from creation of thought through a filter in your head, which makes you able to make a decision, a choice based on all those factors that brought you to that point and brought us to this call. We chose to make a call to be right here at this very point.
I think we need to define.
Are you saying it's predestined to talk to you two every Monday? I mean, what's going on, man? I'm going on a murder spree, man. I better rethink things.
DB, I think you need to listen to Sam Harris a little more and a little less of Jerry Garcia.
Well, I tell you, man, he showed me a lot of things. I got to tell you that, but
I bet he did.
A whole lot of people did. You know,
right.
But you know me, dude.
I'm pro hallucinogens. I don't know this. The whole LSD is, was a little intense.
Yeah, I mean,
right.
That's long in the past, but it certainly occurred for quite a while. And there, I mean, like I said, man, it opens the fucking floodgates, man. It's like boom. And,
right.
And your thought process just expands.
You sounded like Jim Morrison there for a minute.
I'm telling you, that's what it does, man.
You're talking about the doors, the filter.
I'm just speaking to that filter that you guys don't agree with that I say is there. You know that allows you to filter that conscious thought and make a decision based on.
It opens
up
the doors of your perception.
That's right. And boom.
I'm just saying that the filter is also in that equation of what we're influenced by.
Yeah. I don't know how that would work then, because if you're sending it through and you got no choice in the matter, then that filter, then there would be none, right?
Well,
if your filter goes off and tells you,
don't kill this person, you go, don't kill this person because of what you've been through. Your genetic makeup, your childhood, everything you've experienced in your entire life goes up to that moment where you decide to use that filter to begin with.
I don't know.
It's got to be all part of the equation. It doesn't fly.
I mean, if it's he's so much about the spontaneous of it, thought to action, thought to action. And I create this thought, and I put it into action, and I've got no way to control what I do with that. You know, there's something in between there for me. There's something in between
He's saying it's illusory. It's illusory. The decision, you think you have this decision, I got to choose between right or wrong.
Yeah,
he's saying it's really illusory that you're already were going to do what you were going to do. You keep saying you had this choice, thought to action. That's why it sounds like that.
You didn't kill that person because you were never going to kill that person to begin with. It was just not in you to do it because of what's been determined.
Well, it could be in for you to do it, but it may be at a later date when you go through some more circumstances.
Exactly.
You know, I might not be in my ability to kill somebody, and then after let's say something happened 5 years down the road. Let's say I had a family member killed by a drunk driver, and then all of a sudden, I'm at a party and this guy jokes about getting his third DUI or whatever. And wants to get in a fit, you know, and we start arguing about it. And I say, "Fuck you, my niece got killed by a drunk driver." And we start arguing, and then at the point we start fighting, and then the guy pulls a knife on me, and then you know, and I beat him to death with a chair or something.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, at that point, it was all those circumstances that brought me to the point where I could kill somebody. What's that?
When you choose not to kill, it's going to be because of a reason up to that moment. That it wasn't right for that to happen. Down the line,
and
that
I'm
could change.
It could also change.
Still...
Yeah, and it could change. Just because you're not able to kill somebody at one point in your life, you may get into a circumstance that's totally different around different people. You know, you may have different, you know, your body chemistry may have changed, you know, over 10, 15, 20 years. There's a lot of people that when they get older do stuff when they're not really in their right mind at some points. They're, you know, a little goofy and... You know, they get to the point, maybe they're on medicine or whatever, and they might, you know, there's been people that have killed people in an elderly age that were past, they were like, he was such a nice old man or a nice old lady their whole lives. We never could see them doing this. Well, they were on some, you know, 9 different medicines, and they got angry, and they were depressed, and they just did something really stupid. But, I mean, you know, everything worked into that point where they were, came to the point where they did that atrocious crime. But it was all the stuff that led up to it. You know, maybe 20, 30 years earlier, they would have never did anything like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's all...
I don't know, man. I mean, maybe it's all semantics. You know, I keep talking about this web, and, you know, one of your decision points sends you down an avenue, and this decision point, that decision point ends up where you end up killing that person. You know, and it's so I don't know. I mean, it sounds similar, but it's definitely not, you know, the same.
Right.
Well, I can say that I think it's pretty known that we use 100% of our brains, but we only understand 10% of how it works.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, dream realm, man. I mean, we're talking about consciousness and stuff, and how we don't know anything about dreams. Maybe that's the real world, you know. Who knows? I mean, that's...
Right.
You know. Anyway. All right, man.
That was a good show.
Fucking made some donuts again today.
Right, we made some donuts. Hey, it's our 12th show, so we're still going. And next week, after the show, I'm gonna smash this fucking laptop. And next week, I'll have a new computer. So, sorry for the sonic blast that went on. Crazier help. Thanks for calling in again, Crusher. And, all right, man. Let's call this one done.
It's in the books.
All right, y'all.
See you later, man. Adios.
See you later, Crusher.
Peace.
Yep. Peace.
Blister fish.
We're out. Stack it. Blister fish. We're out.